Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Nuclear Thursday. No, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. 21 November 2013, about a minute past the hour as we begin this broadcast evening. And just having mentioned it, can I throw something out there? Can we please... Pretty please. And let's just start this by ourselves among the Horn family commune. What do you say? Can we please stop referring to procedural votes in a deliberative body, functional or dysfunctional, as the nuclear option? Because, frankly, if it was referred to as the Holocaust option, there would be, and rightly so, an outcry from many, many corners of the political universe in this country. How many people did the United States kill by dropping nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? How many people, and frankly, I don't even know if we know the answer to this question. How many people did the United States kill with the massive amount of nuclear weapons testing, both inside the United States and outside? I don't, and you know, I'm guilty. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, too. I'm guilty. I've referred to it as the nuclear option, but having heard it almost, no, almost about it, ad nauseam for a week or more now, will he, won't he, does Harry Reid have the spine? I realize that it's another instance of for-profit media-generated hyped eliminationism. I guess we first heard about it back when, who was it, Trent Lott, or was it Bill the Cat Killer Frist, was talking about doing away with the filibuster in the Senate back when they had control of it. And I don't... It would be an interesting piece of media research to find out who the genius was that decided to compare a bit of Senate procedural arcanery with the deliberate slaughter of God knows, God only knows, how many innocent civilians in the Second World War. It just struck me as being icky. Immoral, unethical, and sometimes you can learn how unethical something is by substituting in another phrase, as I did with the word Holocaust, which I find the very idea to be utterly disgusting. But it was like that post over at Americans Against the Tea Party by John Prager, who turns out to be another West Virginian, who told me he was sorry if I was offended at his use of the word tea billies. He was sorry if I was offended by his use of a smear for an entire cultural group. He was sorry if I was offended. You know, the classic non-apology apology. But then said no, he will continue to use the phrase. I let it pass. Maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe that's what's gotten me thinking about that. Because, you know, if you point out that if the name of the Washington Redskins were the name, the Washington fill in the racial epithet here, then it becomes obvious that it's a pretty noxious term. If instead of using the phrase T-billies, the individual had used some other revolting epithet. And let's be quite clear here. I'm not the guy to reach out to for defending those ignorami. Although it's a lot more fun to say ignoramuses. But when it becomes necessary to slur someone else in order to make your point that you hold someone else in disdain, then I think if we check our privilege, we might find that there's one of those teachable moments. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Senator Trent Lott, R. Mississippi, member of the Concerned White Citizens Council, first used the term nuclear option for this maneuver in March of 2003. Why am I not surprised that a phrase would be coined by an eliminationist, right-wing, warmongering racist? And naturally, we all had to pick it up and run with it. Sure. So that it enters the lexicon, so that we... Because language matters. It really does. Because when we dilute a term, and, you know, the right wing does this. I used the word Holocaust a few minutes ago. The right wing does it when they talk about the Holocaust of American babies that has taken place in America since the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. And thereby they managed to spit on the memories of 6 million Jews and countless homosexuals, undesirables, political dissidents, Roma, otherwise known as gypsies, etc. But that's not going to slow them down, because they are, after all, part of the pro-life industry. And they're right-wingers, and if anybody was to say anything to them, they'd be talking about how, that's just political correctness. That's all that is. It's political correctness. We can't use colorful language anymore, you know, like colored. And I welcome your input on this. Does language matter? I mean, I've got a right wing pitch of a story today. It features comments from some creepy old lady at the Susan B. Anthony list. By the way, they co-opted Susan B. Anthony to be a dead spokesperson for controlling the workings of women's insides. Her name is Marjorie Dannenfelser. You know, I think you can go to Planned Parenthood and get your Dannenfelser taken care of. But there it is in the slug to the email pitch. Nuclear option opens door for radical pro-abortion judges. Harry Reid and Senate Democrats have flung open the doors to radical nominees who will do the bidding of the abortion industry.
Shame on senators with strong pro-life constituencies, especially Kay Hagan and Mary Landrieu, for voting to overturn a long-standing pillar of the democratic process. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. Long-standing democratic process. Is there anything less democratic than letting a little cadre of weirdos grind an entire half of the legislative body of the United States to a halt over its weird prejudices and biases and fantasies and imaginings? And no, there isn't. Marjorie Dannenfelser said,
"Make no mistake, Senator Reid will use this new expanded power to thwart the pro-American majority."
Okay. Mr. Orwell? No, you're busy. Okay. Pro-American majority, which is constituted by a minority. Because all those weirdos, right-wingers, teabagger hacks, here, language moment. You know why I call them teabaggers? Has nothing to do with the sexual practice. It has to do with the fact that they go to their weird little rallies where they manifest the fact that they understand precisely zero about the American Constitution or most of the institutions that undergird it, and they wear hats with teabags festooned about them. I didn't make them do that. That makes them teabaggers. So it's not the same as T-Billies, and it's not the same as nuclear option, and it's not the same as the American abortion holocaust. Let's see what's got Marjorie's Dannenfelser all in a wad.
Make no mistake, Senator Reid will use this new expanded power to thwart the pro-life American majority. An advanced pro-abortion activist like Georgetown professor Cornelia Pillard. Pillard is a longtime pro-abortion radical who has called abortion a necessity that frees women from conscription into maternity, which it is.
And those of us who would like to look forward, though the view is a short and somewhat myopic one through the lens of the relative shortness of human life, toward a human future on this planet that extends past, 3 minutes after noon tomorrow. Freeing women from conscription into maternity is the best hope we have. I believe the phrase Sandra used the other night was empowering women to make decisions about their own bodies and when or if to have a child. Marjorie and her talking Dannenfelser says,
looking ahead to 2014, the SBA list,
Small Business Administration, oh no, Susan B. Anthony,
will be educating voters in North Carolina, Louisiana, and elsewhere about this radical vote.
Funny. It wasn't so radical back when the Republicans were threatening to do it and only didn't do it after a bunch of Democrats, including Robert C. Byrd, got on their knees and went crawling to Trent Lott saying, "Oh, we promise not to filibuster your godforsaken weirdo right-wing anti-American nominees anymore if you'll just let us have our filibuster." Remember? Gang of 13, weren't they called? Weren't we given some bilious bullshit excuse about donut stains and coffee rings on handwritten letters written around the in some sort of kerosene lamplight on the oil cloth covered dinner tables of West Virginia to Senator Byrd, which could not possibly have reached him through the United States mail, but it made a nice image, so he said it anyway, and that's how we got Samuel Alito, who is in favor of shooting boys in the head who are running from the cops and are about 30 yards away. Well, yeah, Samuel Alito. And now, of course, they've got the right wing has the for-profit media describing this basic attempt of the president to fulfill his constitutional duty of appointing federal judges as a radical court-packing scheme. Yeah, I heard it just the other day. What was it? It was probably that. It was probably Chinless Mitch of Kentucky, who isn't, but was from Alabama, and it really makes much more sense when you think about it in those terms. Saying something about how it's obvious to me. There's plenty of judges on the D.C. circuit. Got more than enough judges because there are judges. We got Janice Rogers Brown up there. Yeah, she used to be a Maoist, but she's our Maoist now, baby. So, yeah, nuclear option opens door for radical pro-abortion judges. Nuclear option, nuclear option, nuclear option. Ah, okay. Thank you for the history lesson, Lottie, in the chat room. Have you been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room? You really should try it out. It's a great load of fun. Room filling up right now. Kathy's there. Lottie's there. Sparky's there. Texas T is there. Hi, gang. Lottie pointing out, Bob, that was when we progressives coined the phrase spineless Democrats. Yes. But give it some thought, would you? I would actually like to have your input, email, Twitter, tweets, Facebook, what have you. I'd like to have your input on this. Is using the phrase nuclear option profoundly disrespectful to the people who have had one used on them, or perhaps the descendants of them, because the people who had them used on them, a lot of them didn't see the light of day anymore, and, well, they went back to being the elemental particles of the universe, which they were at the Big Bang. And did so horribly. Because it just strikes me as a lot bit wrong. Texas T, I cannot make myself pronounce it N-U-C-U-L-A-R, because then I have to put my head through a wall or something, because then I think of all the number of times that Dim Leader said it. Hey, Cosmic, welcome to the chat room, brother. So just a little something to get us started in trying to think about how it because, see, that's a room. The Senate of the United States is a room full of millionaires, none of whom will ever, 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 ever know anything even remotely relating to the agonies of radiation sickness. So Trent Lott and the rest of his right-wing brothers and sisters can take that term and stick it where the sun never shines, sideways. Or maybe I'm just oversensitive. Yeah, two cents a tab. But yes, I was actually out running errands when the news broke that Harry Reid had finally gotten fed up with these shenanigans and imposed something of a modest, rather weak, not particularly world-changing, universe-shifting rule change on the Senate. Because you know what is being described as the yawning, gaping mouth of hell personally opened on earth by Harry Reid. You know that it isn't, right? What it is a procedural rule that will let the President of the United States be the President of the United States. This rule does not speak to Supreme Court nominees. So, for instance, if it should happen that there would be a God in his, her, or its heaven, noodly appendage or not, and that somehow or another, let's say Anthony Kennedy, Slappy Thomas, and Fat Tony Scalia all got called home to Jesus,
and Barack Hussein Obama went out looking for some good Muslims with which to fill those vacancies. Nothing that Harry Reid did today would affect the power of the right wing to stomp their feet, scream, holler about Islamo-fascism, socialist, Muslim, Kenyan, anti-colonialist, and block those nominees, the new nominees to the spots vacated by the recently gone to Jesus, Fat Tony Scalia, Slappy Thomas, and Anthony Kennedy. Right, there you go, Lottie. Gay, abortion-loving Muslims who are socialists, Kenyans, anti-colonialists. I can't keep up. There's nothing to stop the Republicans from absolutely making sure that the president cannot fulfill his constitutional duty of appointing members to fill those Supreme Court vacancies and then have them voted on via the advice and consent that the Senate is required to give on any such nominations. Nip! No, this only applies to lower level federal court appointees and administrative appointees. So no matter what the weirdos, and you know, if you just stuck your head out the door and listened for a minute earlier this afternoon, you could hear a sort of the squealing of stuck pigs, and that was Mitch McConnell and Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III et al. Cultural question rolling in from Robert in Australia. Teabag hat, is that like the classic Australian cork hat? Yes! Yes, it is. Only replace the corks with teabags. Exactly. Oh, by the way, before going any further, I want to thank Ed and Kathy, both of whom have gotten us started down the road toward our fundraising this evening. We pulled up about $200 short last night, so that meant that tonight was $350. But thanks to Ed and Kathy, it is now down at $280. And if folks would like to follow in their footsteps and help out along those ways, that way, hopefully by the time we get to Friday on the front porch tomorrow, we will be able to finish the week to the good. PayPal button, you know where it is, headonradionetwork.com. So too, the traditional mail address, which is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, WV25801. Checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should in fact be made payable to Head On Communications, because, well, Bob don't get the money. It goes to keep this whole thing up and running. So thanks again to Kathy and to Ed for keeping things rolling. Much appreciated. But to go back for a minute to the whole modification of the ancient undemocratic rule of filibuster, which incidentally has been used more in the last 5 years than in any other period of the history of the Senate of the United States. What? That one in our White House wants to hire a replacement for the White House chef? Filibuster! Kenyan Muslim socialism! Now, of course, the chinless one, Mitch the Turtle McConnell, has complained that the whole purpose of this was to divert people's attentions from the Kenyan Muslim socialism of Obamacare. Da-na-na. What a sleazy, loathsome gang they are, aren't they? But there was one little something-something that took place inside of all of this drama that grabbed me.
I just saw it run across my mobile device while I was out running errands that Harry Reid had done what he had done, that he had ever so gently tweaked the arcane and undemocratic rules of the Senate, leaving in place, the, as noted, the right of right-wingers to stomp their feet and scream and block nominees to the Supreme Court and so forth. I was out and about when I saw that. And the vote was 52 to 48. And I thought, 52. That doesn't sound like as many Democratic senators as there actually are. Gee, I wonder who could have possibly crossed the line and voted with the godforsaken, miserable shitweasels of the Republican Party. I, of course, already knew. Because, well, I'm special that way. So, I hurried over to my Twitter account and put a question out to the wider world, querying the following. Educated guess. At Senator Joe Manchin voted with GOP on filibuster reform today. Hashtag, am I right? And because she stays on top of such things, Sandra was right there and said, yes! All caps and four or five exclamation points. There was no magic involved. Because Joe Manchin votes with Republicans because he are one. Because it will be a frigid day in perdition when Joe, because see, this is part of his branding. This is part of his marketing. He's a maverick. He's the real maverick, not that John McCain fellow. He's a real maverick. And you show how mavericky you are by not voting to let the president, who comes ostensibly from the party of which you are ostensibly a member, be president. Oh, sure, Carl Levin was there, too. Carl is enamored of the ancient and disorderly rites of the Senate. That would be R-I-T-E-S, rites. But Joe Manchin was there because Joe Manchin fancies himself Joe Lieberman for the 21st century, I guess. With much, much better hair. And here's where I am with that. I know that there are those who say, yeah, Bob, but he's got a D behind his name, and, you know, when it really counts, when the chips are really down, he really does, but no, he doesn't. I'm just putting this out there, just a public call, if we may, pretty please. Joe, buddy, we've drunk beer together, Joe. We have. We've talked Mountaineer football together, Joe. I like you, Joe. It wouldn't chap my ass in the least if you were my next door neighbor. I'm sure you would keep your lawn immaculately clean. You might even have some dark skinned folks to mow your lawn for you. Who knows? Or maybe a disabled coal miner with black lung that you don't give a shit about. Or maybe some poor kid from up the holler. Whose mama's dying of cancer, whom you also don't give a shit about. Joe. Change parties. I don't care whether it's gender or politics or the closet is a shitty place to live, and you're living in the political closet, Joe. Come out, Joe. Come out of the closet. See, some of us remember way, way, way back when you were just a little pissant state senator, and you trundled yourself around going to all the pro-life West Virginians for life bean dinners and shit. We know you're a Republican. We know all about your family, Joe. We know how A. James and A. James Manchin, your uncle, and Arch Moore were bosom buddies up at Harvard on the Mon, my beloved West Virginia University. We know, Joe. We know that even though your family claimed it was Democratic, that they actively campaigned for Arch Moore to become Republican governor of West Virginia in 1968. We know, Joe. I mean, it's like Larry Craig in the men's room in the lowest level of the Minneapolis airport in there tapping his toes. We know, Joe. We know where your heart lies. We know where your sympathies are. You don't good. My God. The one thing that would let a whole bunch of your constituents get health care for the first time in eons. And you oppose it. The only people doing that, Joe, are Republicans. Every time you co-sponsor a bill, it's with some Republican. Joe, come on out of the closet. Even if you come out of the closet as a Republican, you'll feel better about yourself, Joe. You're not a conservative Democrat. You're a Republican. You're Zell Miller, younger, with better hair. Come on out, Joe. Quit lying to yourself and lying to the rest of us. A life lived in a lie is a life not lived at all. Come on out, Joe. Switch parties. Do it now. Don't wait for 2014. And don't sell West Virginia's ignorant voters short. They're still going to run out and vote for you as long as you smudge a little coal filth on your face and talk about how you're a friend of coal. They'll vote for you. It's a damn shame our Democratic Party in West Virginia doesn't have the nerve to throw you out. Last year, the Democratic Party in the state of West Virginia passed a resolution demanding that Democrats elected in West Virginia support the Democratic nominee for president. You showed them that digital representation of the state of West Virginia that one can make with the palm of one's right hand facing outward and the middle finger stuck up and the thumb stuck out. You showed that to the Democratic Party of West Virginia. So quit. Quit playing. Be the Republican that you are. I mean, the actual, real, no-kidding Democrats in the state of West Virginia already despise you, Joe. We spit on the ground at the mention of your name. We know you're a fraud. We know you're a hustler for coal. Joe, come on out of the closet. Peel off that Democratic mask and let us see the Reaganite Nixonian underneath that you really are, Joe. Because you're not fooling anybody. Not even fooling yourself. Your family knows, Joe. Come on out of the closet. You're going to feel so much better. Then you and not really his name, Mitch McConnell,
can sit there and rub elbows together like the good buddies you are, and you'll be members of the same party, and we'll... come on out of the closet, Joe. But you don't trust the voters of West Virginia, do you? No, you don't. You're afraid without that D by your name, we'll know... What do you think? You think we're not going to figure it out when you're out there stumping for Arch Moore's daughter, who just looks like her daddy in a bad wig, while she's running for John D. Rockefeller IV's vacated Senate seat next year? You think we're not going to notice you out there stumping for her? You think we don't already know that you tried to lean on Natalie Tennant to keep her from running as the Democratic nominee for that Senate seat? You think we don't know? Everybody knows, Joe! Come on out. You'll feel better. And God knows we will too. Because you do yourself such a profound disservice when you lie to us all and tell us that you're a Democrat. Because it is a lie. So, just an initial little something. Because this is personal. I visit people in hospitals. I go to funerals of people that Joe Manchin has had a hand in killing. Oh, no, not directly. It's not like he shivved him or pushed him off a cliff or anything like that. No. He's had a hand in killing him because he knows, as well as anybody else, that the mountaintop removal industry is killing West Virginians. Those hospital visits and those phone calls and those funerals are brutal and they're sad. And Joe doesn't show up for any of them. Oh, I'm sure when the head of the West Virginia Coal Association shuffles off this mortal coil, he'll be there, he'll send flowers, there'll be great goddamn big crocodile tears. But there are no tears for Printer Holler in Joe Manchin's eyes. There are no tears for a woman who goes to her grave before she sees her grandson turn 3. There are no tears. Because it's just business, right? So I just kind of had to get that off. And you know what? If Joe Manchin became a Republican tomorrow, I would be the first person to applaud him for doing it. Because it would be the most honest thing he has ever done in all his born days. For once, I, a West Virginian, could be proud of my fellow West Virginian, Joe Manchin.
So that's the start. Do you want to talk about the filibuster reform? Can we do it without using the phrase, the N-word, that's followed by a U, a C, an L, an E, and an R, A, and an R? Beth, with a note, subject line, nuclear option, in quotes, yes, this is a profoundly disrespectful term, as well as screaming hyperbole, but I've always found referring to the World Trade Center as Ground Zero just as deeply offensive. Good call, Beth. For the same reason. What it was horrible enough. But comparing it to the enduring horror of Hiroshima or Nagasaki should be beneath anyone except Sarah Palin. Or maybe I'll add George Bush. Or a snickering Dick Cheney. Thank you. I appreciate the affirmation, Beth. I really do. So, if I should ever, because this stuff ingrains rather easily, if I should ever actually use that phrase again, somebody, email, Twitter, Facebook, phone call, whatever, Skype, Bob, you use that phrase. Oh, damn, did I? Sorry. Because just that because the other side is a bunch of eliminationist asses doesn't mean that we have to be that, too. And thanks to Beth, Ground Zero is also out of my vocabulary. So that's this evening's starting place. We'll take a little break. And again, thanks to Kathy and Ed for getting us started. Other help is more than welcome. We are at $280 for fundraising this evening to try to climb out of the hole. What does that do? That supports Conversation Radio, of which this is perhaps the one and only exemplar. And this, in turn, is The Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Take my life, so take my soul. That's what you say.
It seems sort of DJ appropriate, didn't it? Three Dog Night from a long, long time ago. And that is Liar.
Going out to you, Joe Manchin.
And by the way, a tweet coming in from Fritz in Arkansas, who has his own axe to grind. And Manchin can take Mark Pryor with him when it comes time to come out. Hashtag closets, hashtag secret Republicans. Yes. Because wouldn't we rather know them for who they are? Makes a little bit of sense to me. Oh, by the way, I read the Raw story just about every day. And I know I will forget this. But if somebody would like to drop them a note, tell them it would be just dandy if they dropped the use of the phrase nuclear option two. There it is, headline, Senate Democrats drop. Oh, now we're dropping. No, not even triggering anymore. Senate Democrats drop the nuclear option on Republicans and limit filibusters. Drop. Aren't we better than this? By the way, the little sub-slug above Senate Democrats drop the nuclear option on Republicans and limit filibusters is kaboom. Really? Do we have to be like them? Can't we rise above some of this filth? Kaboom. He may not hear the program tonight. I don't see him in the chat room. Haven't seen him on Twitter or Facebook. But I've got a feeling our buddy Tim from L.A. would probably have a position on this. Kaboom, nuclear option. Oh, that's just colorful verbiage, isn't it? No, it's not. It is a manifestation of privilege. It is a manifestation of the fact that we really can't take the time to imagine even one human being as a fully functioning, fully empowered, fully self-actuating human being in the midst of that nuclear nightmare that transpired in a week's time in August of 1945 in Japan. And here, let's add one more thing to nuclear option. Fukushima? Anybody? Chernobyl? Anybody? I really do try to keep the eliminationism out of my language. I fail from time to time. I do. But that's a lapse in consciousness, not judgment. I'm just checking something right here. Let's see. McConnell, Senate Republicans have been very, very fair to Obama. That's Diane Sweet over at Crooks and Liars. Ah, Susie. Susie Madrak, headline, 8:24 a.m., nuked. Most nominees now require a simple Senate majority. And I have tremendous admiration for Susie Madrak. Seven AM. Will Harry Reid nuke him today? Come on, guys. Please. We gotta be better than this. We just gotta. Or maybe we're not. I don't know. Okay, one more site.
God, I'm really beginning to feel alone in this.
There's another headline. Why Senate Democrats had to invoke the nuclear option. Damn. Maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe it's okay to pretend that a piece of political maneuvering is the same thing as vaporizing human beings into nothing more than their shadows of their former selves baked into brick walls. Maybe I'm the one who's out of step. Oh, Bob, you just don't understand it. No, I don't. It is getting a little warm. This just in from Sandra. Headline, Joshua Philip Klimas arrested for threatening to kill President Obama. Joshua Philip Klimas has been arrested for threatening to kill President Barack Obama. Klimas, 32, was arrested on November 20th over threats, the United States Attorney's Office in Connecticut said on Thursday. Klimas appeared before a judge and was ordered to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. Klimas sent several messages to the WhiteHouse.gov website that threatened Obama and his family. Quote, if you do not resign by the end of the year, I will kill you. The office said Klimas of Coventry, Connecticut, has also threatened other people. And of course we know that there have been more threats against the life of this president than any other. And thank you, Sandra. I needed a little bit of help. On the whole nuclear option thing, Sandra notes via Twitter, the framing on that is so bad, considering it's just adding a bit of democracy to an illiberal institution. Yes! It's a move on a chessboard that is equated with the slaughter of innocents. Michael, in Sevastopol, too bad it's not Titanic Tuesday. NPR headline, nuclear option vote marks tectonic shift in Senate rules. Oh, F me to pieces. I mean running. So, not only does National Petroleum Radio equate this tepid little piece of senatorial maneuvering to the wholesale elimination via the world's only use of nuclear weapons against a civilian population, they also equate it with the movement of the plates of the earth. God Almighty! The folks inside the beltway there, it may not be their privilege needs checking. It may be their eyes or their perceptions. They need to get out more. Our buddy Luda, using symbols instead of the word N, lots of symbols, R, option. Maybe Trent Lott was referring to the Three Mile Island disaster or Chernobyl. And, see, Irish Dave is going where my mind has been. Riddle me this, Bob, man. Couldn't we call it the Senate Holocaust instead?
Yeah, that'd be real disgusting, wouldn't it? And the thing is, no one would have a hard time understanding that that was disgusting. Because, see, there's some racism tucked in here, too. Had we used the atomic bomb on the Axis powers in Europe, we would probably not have nuclear option in the vocabulary because it would be remembered as a terrible, terrible thing that we just had to do, but did so ever so remorsefully. There was no remorse in Hiroshima and no remorse in Nagasaki. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Bill.
Well, they finally did something they should have done a long time ago.
A, yes.
You know, but the use of the term nuclear option is pushing it pretty hard, isn't it? As you say, it's ridiculous.
Well, the more I thought about it earlier today, the more stomach-churning that it got.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing, if you've read enough, what's your opinion of the guys who developed that bomb? Do you think they really knew what they had? I don't think the militarists did. I don't think the Army and Navy fellas, did. The guys who were flying it didn't know what it was.
No, but I think the J. Robert Oppenheimers had a hint, had a clue. They knew the forces that they were dealing with.
Oppenheimer was a very intriguing person.
What is it with the first detonation of the first hydrogen bomb? Didn't he quote from the Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah.
Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Yep.
Didn't he subsequently decide that a nuclear-armed Earth was not necessarily a good thing?
Well, certainly not a potentially a lot less long-term thing. Although the way things are going anymore through industry, I'm beginning to wonder. Because of the climate change situation, warming, global warming, with what we're seeing in the... Okay, the typhoon could have been, roll the dice. They say, I never did read much. When I read a short history of the Civil War, that guy Fletcher Pratt brings up Krakatoa. I had to go to the dictionary to see what he was talking about.
Yeah, because
I enjoyed about his work so much. He had you doing this a lot.
That's what. That's what happens when I'm not looking where I'm going, and I've stubbed my toe. I crack a toe. Oh, I'm sorry.
That'll happen. That'll work. Yeah, I remember one time. I can't even say how I ended up giving somebody a barefoot kick, and whoa! I'll teach you a lesson, fella.
Yeah, you don't do that twice.
No, that's something you don't do, but. Getting back to the things that we're seeing, what you guys are going through down there. I was just talking to a friend of mine this morning who cut a deal with the frackers, and they paid half of what they were supposed to, and then when it came to pay the other half, they fracked the person good on that one, didn't pay him.
Imagine that, the oil and gas industry stiffened somebody. Once upon a time, there was a discovery of an oil formation that was, at the time, heretofore unknown. And, wow, look, another one. They named it the Big Engine Shale. And that would be B-I-G-I-N-J-U-N.
Yeah.
This is around the turn of the last century, 1900s. And there was, oh, my God, there was a boom. And
tell me what that had to do with even the terrible term use of the term engine.
It's just what they named it. I don't know the entire history, but just by way of noting, your buddy who got stiffed by the industry.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's still the practice, but back then, one sold because one wanted to maximize the amount. You want to get the most out of your hustle, right?
Yeah.
You know how that works. So when they were selling interests in oil wells, they would sell them in 1/32nd shares.
Oh.
So if one bought a share in an oil well, one would generally buy a 1/32nd share, in which case, all of us understanding this much mathematics, and God knows it's a challenge for me, Bill.
You and me both.
But you owned a 1/32nd piece of the either working or profits of that well. Now here's where the fun starts. The guys out there hustling the shares of the wells would sell 64/32nds. They would sell 128/32nds, and everybody had a 32nd share, only the math didn't work. But they never paid any profits either, because there weren't any profits. It's like a Hollywood movie. There's never any profits. It's all production costs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want a share of the gross, not the net.
Yeah, you better.
But, ripping people off in oil well deals is an old, nasty and frequently practiced hustle. In fact, it creeps in, and you and I are fans of classic comedy.
Yep.
It even creeps into the script of The Bank Dick.
Okay.
Written by one Mohandas K. Jeeves, who was actually William Charles Duncan Fields.
Oh, he wrote that himself.
Yeah, he wrote it himself under the pen name Mohandas Kane Jeeves, or maybe it was Mahatma Kane Jeeves, I can't remember. But he did so because that way you maximized how much you got paid, because if you wrote it, directed it, and acted in it, it's just, you know, you're a contract player, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's a different story, though, if somebody else writes it, and somebody else directs it, and somebody else acts in it. So anyway, he wrote the script for The Bank Dick, and which is anyone who loves comedy, who has never seen that film, is in for the treat of a lifetime. Like we were talking about, the physical comedy and the verbal comedy is magnificent. And so there's a passage in there in which Og Oglesby, possible son-in-law to Egbert Suse, accent grave over the E, played by Fields, works at the local bank. And a grifter shows up who wants to sell shares in a beefsteak mine. You heard that right. A beefsteak. Yes. And of course he's Og is a bit of a simpleton, but he's scrupulous and he doesn't want to screw over the bank or anything. And Fields has to lecture him. Take a chance. Take it while you're young. My uncle Effingham Hufnagel III, an air ascensionist, took a chance on leaping out of a hot air balloon into a pile of hay. Well, did he make it? No, he didn't, which is precisely my point. Had he been a younger man, he might have.
Ah.
Take a chance. And so that's how the hustle of the beefsteak mine works its way into the script. But, yeah, the beefsteak mine, it was a con, and you could see it from a mile away, except for those who wanted to get something over on somebody else.
Yeah, those cons out there, I gave away my contract from shall we say, the head of a nation. We use that as a name for the company.
Yes.
The home, the place where a nation has its home business.
Yes.
Yeah, and it basically offered us 7% of the wholesale price, which had to be divided between five musicians and one manager. And the wholesale...
Spend it all in one place.
Yeah, if the retail price of an LP was about $2.50 to $3 a piece in those days, you can imagine what the wholesale price was. And then they didn't guarantee to release it. And they wouldn't send me a producer to work with or pull us out of the Middle West and go to the recording center, you know, to their recording studio with a producer to help me come up with. And by that time, I had a whole 3 years of running a band behind me. I never was, you know, a record producer. I was a damn get-em-drunk band leader, you know?
Right.
Sell the booze and get people dancing. That was the name of the game. And you get to a point after a while, you probably haven't dealt with some of the contractors that come around to redo your bathroom or kitchen or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I've got a whole bunch of very drafty windows thanks to one of those folks.
Yeah, when I was in the TV racket, there was one guy who had a deal going, a 99-cent or a buck or $2 service call. And then he kidnapped the TV. And, once he got it in his possession.
Yeah, nobody makes a move or the tube gets it.
Exactly. And some of the stuff, I told you the story that he, and anybody who's an electronic person out there, when this guy told this woman he installed a rebuilt filter capacitor. You know, those were parts of the power supply that converted AC to DC. You know,
right, and no such animal.
Yeah, exactly. And
with beefsteak mines.
Well, I got hit by a guy. I was eating breakfast one morning. A guy comes in. He says, "Is that your car?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Hey, you need some body work done on that," and blah, blah, blah. And he offered, and I said, "Well, nah," I said, "I can use Bondo too, you know. I don't." And you ever hear the Williamson clan?
No.
You should have. Somebody Google it up. They operate out of West by God.
Out of Williamson?
The Williamsons. That's a gypsy clan, supposedly.
Okay.
And stories I read about them were come up and do body work for a guy, and it was a Sunday, and they couldn't get Bondo. They couldn't get fiberglass, so the guy filled the guy's fender with branch wire. Smoothed it out and painted over it. Guy pays him, and the guy comes out a few hours later, and some of the neighborhood dogs are chewing on his fenders. Where the branch wire was, the liver sausage. Ah, man, there's a hustler.
That's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is an art of its sort.
Well, these guys would also do beautiful jobs on your driveway until it rained and you watched your driveway rolling, you know, slowly into the street. A kind of paint colorization and a little hustle here and there, and, of course, as soon as it rained, there goes your driveway. There's always somebody, and magazine salesman. Do you ever have them come by your house in your life?
Oh, yes.
I did that for one day to see what it was.
Then there were the little kids selling grit, too.
Oh, grit, yes. Yeah, I think one of them is that guy with the horrendous voice on right-wing radio. Man, is this guy. We think the one guy is terrible, which he is, the guy you do so well.
Who, Levin?
Yeah, Levin's the guy I'm thinking of, and the other one you do so well. Yeah, that's the guy. Who gave him a job? Are these a bunch of political operatives, or?
Now I'm not sitting here saying, Bill, that you know I'm an old hand at radio or anything, but I've been.
You have the voice, man.
I've been fooling around with it since I was 15, 16 years old, and it kind of makes you ashamed to share the same industry because it used to matter. Well, I'm beginning to sound like Gloria Swanson. We had faces. It used to matter whether or not one had a broadcast voice.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine was the broadcast voice for a 50K clear channel, and not the corporation. The type of station. Was the booth announced for a 50K clear channel, and he has the most beautiful baritone bass you have ever heard in your life. And in the earlier days of radio, that meant something. I mean, the reason you wind up with all the baritone basses in radio is because early microphones did not handle high frequencies well.
Yep.
So,
I didn't.
But now, no, you can be a pusillanimous whiner like the Hannity job.
No.
Or you can be like Mark Levin, the man with a voice made for print.
Yeah, I mean it's like when somebody put away that bastard file that he's grating against my ears.
Yeah. What does Malloy say? It feels like somebody's taking an ice pick to your ears.
Yeah, that's close too. But the idea of this congressional thing has been a long time coming. because when did they start the filibuster? When did that get rolling, Bob? You have a background on the history of it?
It goes way back. I mean, it's we're talking about 19th century stuff.
Yeah, I would imagine it went back to the days when a guy would take a stick to another man in the Congress. Of course, some of the world is still catching up with this. Some of these Taiwanese meetings, congressional type, you know, legislative types.
Oh, where they bust out in fisticuffs?
Yeah, all they need is a bunch of pies. At least they'd be hell of a lot of entertainment.
It's a lot healthier.
Yeah. But I don't know how much good this is going to do.
But well, and that's the whole point, Bill. It's not that big a deal.
No.
This is only with regard to making sure that people who are essential functions of the executive branch of the government can get through and get busy doing their jobs, and lower court judges, you know, from the circuit court down, can get into position. And it's not court packing like weirdos like Levin want to call it. It's just the president. But see, at its essential level, Bill, there is a fundamental objection on the part of the right wing to that one in their White House actually getting to do presidenty stuff.
What they have is a blocked funnel in the judicial area because they want to get those judges in there. I wish to hell the one woman who's so elderly would kind of resign and get another guy a little bit, not guy, girl, I don't care. I don't care if they borrowed my parakeet if it would vote right, you know?
Well, it would vote better than Fat Tony, Slappy Thomas, Roberts, Alito, and Scalia.
Well, the one guy, wasn't the one guy's
father... I mean, Kennedy.
Wasn't the one guy's father connected with the pro-Mussolini crowd in New York?
Yeah, that's Fat Tony Scalia's daddy. He was the head of the Italian-American Mussolini Appreciation Society, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And he behaves like one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have guys I grew up with in the same housing project, and at one time they were Kennedy supporters, John Kennedy. And all of a sudden in their old age, they're leaning to this. If they leaned any farther to the right, they'd have to fight for space with Genghis Khan.
Liberal!
Yeah. Well, Khan, yeah, he was damn liberal. And these guys frightened me because two of them grew up on Social Security. And one of them, his dad got hurt and possibly killed when he was organizing the steel mills. And people forget where they came from sometimes. And that bothers me because it's so wrong. And I just don't know where, I just hope that because they got the court system so tied up, and they want to keep it that way so they can cram more of their people into it. I was delighted with the arrest of Mr. Zimmerman.
Absolutely. But no, you raise a good point. Those folks you're describing are basically ladder stompers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a few rungs up, and get your grimy prole hands off that. What do you call it? I climbed this ladder, right?
When I was living in Lake and everything was flowing and my eyes were working, I would go out to dinner with these guys, and I had a hard time sitting listening to them because I wanted to say, what the hell's happened to you guys when you were young men working for, busting your butt for a living? And my one buddy, your father was a union organizer, for Christ's sake. And now all of a sudden, because he was talking to me about fracking 20 years or more ago. He was talking about this shale oil and this crap. And God, you know, I hate to say God only knows, but man, I don't even think he knows. What the hell are they doing to the earth?
It's nothing good.
Well, I've talked to my friend.
I mean, remember, I can't get a, having finally seen a little bitty bit of Texas and the part where things actually grow, I can't get over this story that there are 30 communities out in the far reaches of West Texas that are just going to disappear because their water's all gone because the frackers took it.
Yeah. See, that's where, if this is where they leave you, I'm kind of glad I'm at the checkout counter. Because if this is where...
Just standing around reading the Inquirer, checking on Robin the Bat Boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Because what else can you do? I mean, they found an apartment for me. I hope that it's in a building built by the Musicians Union.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
In a very hip neighborhood about two blocks from where my first wife and I had a nice house. And,
that could work out nicely, Bill.
Yeah. Because I know enough people who live in the damn building that the people here are decent folks, most of them, but they're from a part of the world where more hell has broken loose. I don't know what you think of, for instance, the Balkans.
Let's see. What did...
What
was it, Bismarck? Who said the whole of the Balkans is not worth the bones of one Pomeranian grenadier?
Yep. And the amount of chaos, and wasn't Yugoslavia a state created by the Treaty of Versailles?
I don't know. Was it the Treaty of Versailles? I'm not entirely sure.
Because at the time of the war, they were Serbia and Croatia and... And the Austrians were dominating the whole, or trying to dominate the whole smear, which, of course, led to the Archduke. I told you the thing that really frightened me was learning that Hitler had a division of people from Yugoslavia, Islamic SS men, wearing red fezes on dress parade.
Right.
And, of course, there was a group of... French, Belgian, even possibly Scandinavian, and different groups put together their own little, the foreign SS, you know. I mean, that kind of stuff, and we're never taught anything in school. Like, I'm having a tough time with the Kennedy assassination because I think I paid too little attention to it when it happened. I kind of bought the story until more and more started coming out, and you find out that Prescott's son was hanging out in Dallas all day, and there was a couple other familiar faces down there. But all I can say about JFK, he had a... there's a lot of people in this world who haven't liked me much, especially other musicians and band leaders, but because I... told him, a lot of them wanted to know why did I write a contract for the job?
Because you didn't particularly cotton to being screwed?
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be the first place I'd go.
Because that's what the old-timers did. The guys in my dad's generation, my dad was, one of his famous expressions was, before radio, every restaurant, and he used the term Chinese, but all these small restaurants had four-piece bands working. And you didn't get rich, but you made a living doing something, number one, that you liked better and maybe you were a lot better at than anything else.
Oh, but see, there's no room in the modern global economy for that, Bill.
No.
Everybody's got to be out there working in the service economy to the greater glory of capitalism.
Well, and I get accused of being an egotist when I go to some of these jam sessions. And I hear some people where I'd like to tell them to take the guitar and jam it. Because in my generation, you didn't get on a stage until you were half ready to play.
Jason Isbell described it, no faking your way through castles made of sand, huh?
Well, there's no faking your way through a lot of things, and that's the way it goes. But I won't tie you up anymore. But so I've got to go tomorrow and sign paperwork and I'm so worried about getting things moved because my one buddy came in. One of the family was here Sunday helping me get my phone mail list, my phone call list in order because I'll probably be without a computer for... I've got another guy going to move the stuff out of here and bring them back, and he's the guy that set them up for me, so he knows his business. I'm loaded with... two friends from the Horn who know this stuff, like, you know, and a third buddy, the guy who takes all the who took, my first recording was on 33 and a third vinyl, and the second on tape, and the third on CD, and now they're all available. But I don't even try to sell them. It's too much of a pain in the ass to sell stuff today. It's not worth it, unless you're selling an awful lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, the one that was the funniest thing, the first LP had my picture of me on it, and my standard line was I sold more of those to dart clubs and target ranges than I could sell the vinyl because of the picture. Yeah. Well, give them something to shoot at.
Well, you know, if you've ever seen photographs of the actual members of the band Kiss without their makeup on, suddenly you understand the Kabuki gig.
Yeah, it helped them a lot.
So I wouldn't be beating myself up, Bill.
Well, I'm from that generation of. There was a time and a place when you looked at the faces of guys in big bands. They were just ordinary looking fellas. Until you put that music in front of them, and you know. And I got to tell people about the similarity between Chicago in 1920 and 21 and in the 1960s when you go in to hear King Oliver and hiding in the corners were a bunch of Caucasian youngsters, including Benjamin Goodman, learning from people like Johnny, you know, clarinet player Johnny Dodds. My dad was a good. And then in the 60s it was Michael Bloomfield, Paul Butterfield, Barry Goldberg, all native Chicagoans, going down and sitting with Muddy Waters and Wolf and you name it. And, man, you ain't going to learn any quicker than that. That's for damn sure. Anyway, I'll let you go. But, again, the Horn family has been so good to me. There's one of the guys I want to talk to because I haven't been able to reach him. And he's a guy I enjoy talking to. And he's not the guy in Central Ohio.
Okay.
That guy I always enjoy. Between the two of us, I don't know what's worse, the humor or us discussing the world situation.
Well, there's I think we're talking about the same individual who still sends me tweets about Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's the man. Bob, if I was off the air, I'd tell you.
I know.
But I think knowing you can kind of figure it had something to do with a good-looking young woman and my her reaction and what ended up happening to me. Anyhow, I'll let it go with that.
All right, Bill, you have a good evening.
Take care.
Bye now. Oh, that's our buddy, Mr. Stress, Bill, calling from Cleveland. On we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Well, a long time, about time. My name's Roger. I'm calling you from Minneapolis. And I've been listening to your show pretty closely now for 7 months.
Wonderful.
It's been a while to come around to find you. But I felt like I've been in among family while listening, and about time I say hi.
Well, I'm glad you did, and I hope it won't be the last.
I doubt it.
And just take a deep breath. You're going to be fine. We've never, except when I screw up and push the wrong button, we've never lost a caller yet.
Well, one of the things that I marvel at is the wide-ranging, erudite knowledge that this show's participants exhibit. It's stunning. I remember one of the first conversations I heard was between you and Sandra, and it went about about an hour, maybe longer. And what that woman doesn't know, I don't know. She is an amazingly knowledgeable person. And that just got me thinking, by golly, we've got a bunch of Renaissance minds got this group of people.
No, I think that's absolutely the truth, and I try to reinforce that, Roger, by noting that this is not about me, and what it is, if I may take just a moment, it is an outright refutation of the concept of talk radio as people listening to terrestrial radio understand it, because it's for-profit media talk radio is personality driven.
And the only other people, frequently, you'll get a caller who will get to say, hi, mega dittos from Busted Knuckle Rush or something like that. And that's enough about you. Let's talk about me. Or else they'll have some expert on. And at the end of the day, I hope this program is a recognition that the real expertise of this country resides in the people who live their lives in it, not people who occupy ivory towers.
Well, I believe that you're on to something. Listening to last night's show, which I think may have been a replay.
No, we were live last night.
It was live, okay. I'm not sure what happened. I don't think I got to hear it live. I heard a lengthy conversation with a fellow who's involved in Illinois in defending that area from.
Okay, that would have been Tuesday night, and that would have been our dear friend Jeff Biggers. Hey, Roger, can I ask you one question? And before we go any further, do you have speakers on in the background? There's some sort of background noise going on.
Well, what the trouble, unfortunately. Okay, my kids are in the living room right now.
Okay.
And I had to hang up my landline phone because the batteries were dying, as I mentioned in the chat room. And so I'm forced now to speak to you on my little laptop computer through Google Voice. And that's a neat way of being able to make toll-free calls, but I don't have a headset that I can put on
I understand.
Your voice out. So it's reflecting in this sort of empty room I'm in, and it's probably ruining some of the sound quality of my first conversation.
It's not ruining it. It was just there in the background and generally,
I tried moving a little ways away from the wall that was right behind me. Did that help any?
Perhaps it did. Yes, it did.
We'll see.
Okay.
Good.
But please continue.
Well, anyway, the matter of the wisdom and power of mind residing in large numbers of people. You know that now I've spent most of my life since the age of 3 regarding myself to be a political theorist. I have an interesting story to share with you with all of us, about how I became, at least for all time, was an atheist, and I still consider myself, at least I would frame myself for most people, to be an atheist, although I think I might verge over into a certain kind of spirituality. But nonetheless, I decided a very long time ago, in my 60s or 70s, that human beings could figure out, I believed it would be possible for us to figure out how to live together and manage ourselves without external authority telling us what to do, and become well enough organized in our understandings of what was necessary on this planet to be able to cooperate without coercion. And that's a pretty high bar and a pretty high belief in the ability of humanity's mindfulness to grow that I naively set at that age. As time has gone on, and I believe just really close to your age, I'm 55, I've become more skeptical of that idea. I still firmly cling to it, but there are so many people that don't seem like they have the wherewithal to make their own self-guided and critically minded decisions. And it sometimes begins to cause me to despair of the power that resides in us masses and wonder what the role of leadership can be in our world. Am I making any sense to you?
You're doing fine.
Okay.
And in point of fact, you say what the role of leadership is, Roger. I would say it's more along the line. You know, what, and it's the same question that people like James Madison were asking. What is the role of government in our lives?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is government?
Well, to my mind, government should flow from within our hearts. I know that that's dreamy. I am of the flower, the late flower power generation, and cling fervently to that as well. But the encyclopedic knowledge of history that you or a lot of your listeners, our community here that I'm inviting myself into, have. But and I learn every time I listen to the show. But I'm really interested in experiments oriented towards, for example, anarchy can be cooperative. I don't know if you're familiar with a thing called the Rainbow Gatherings.
Oh, yes.
Well, I've attended very many of them. My first one was in West Virginia in 1980. And they're very interesting experiments. They work. People give. In a certain sense, the kind of model that you have for making this happen, making the on radio network happen, it's about volunteering and giving without expecting return, but except for a whole. And that's part of the basis on which the Rainbow Gathering seems to continue to thrive, with flaws. And what have you heard about it?
I don't know a great deal, Roger.
Mm-hmm.
But I am familiar with some of its origins, and I'm aware of the meetings in West Virginia, for instance. They were talked mm-hmm. about quite a bit back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, if I understand correctly, it was sort of leaderless.
Mm-hmm.
And it was founded on communal principles.
That's all accurate. It still happens.
I didn't know that.
And gone through a lot of evolution. I'm just mentioning it. Because that's more of a broad dabbling. You know, Bob, I don't want to impose myself for an extended conversation too much today. I do want to share with you, though, I'm feeling a little bit sad now. Because As many different rays of light as there are in our lives, I really am. I have that concern about what the impact of the Fukushima situation portends for us. That and many other things. I live near a frack sand mine in part time in Wisconsin. I've been watching environmental destruction around me and the fraying and absence of community. I spend most of my time in a suburb in the western section of Minneapolis, where people have little interface with each other. And realize I'm running on at the mouth. I'm really quite worried when Helen Caldicott says those who can should attempt to move to the southern hemisphere. And I, being as informed as I've bothered to inform myself about the situation in Fukushima and the instability there and the risks, where's the ray of light here? You had a joyous experience going and sharing with the people in northern Wisconsin in an effort to make that is attempting to say no and preserve a way of life in the Bad River area. That got it for you and for many of us. It's life being about it. I'm pretty worried about this, and I'm trying to figure out where to seek life in that knowledge, for heaven's sake.
Roger, let me take just a moment here and try to address some of this. First of all, I wasn't just up in Ashland County. I was in, we had an evening on Friday evening past in Eau Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And where we were talking about the mountaintop removal of the involved in the proposed taconite iron ore mine up in the Pinoki Hills of northern Wisconsin. When we were in Eau Claire, we were talking about the inherent dangers to human health that are associated with frac sand mining and the ultrafine particulates.
Right.
And, frac sand mining was the tight focus of that discussion. If you're looking for some sort of ray of light in that, let me suggest to you that some of that ray of light comes from the fact that that room was standing room only in the Student Union Center of the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. There are a lot of people who want to gather together and work cooperatively to protect their homes, their families, their communities from these predatory frackers. And so toward that end, if you would like, I encourage you to drop me an email at Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, and I will send you a link to the video of that Eau Claire presentation. And if you wish, I certainly encourage you to send the link around to other people.
Right.
Because that's where, to use your metaphor, that is where the building of that light comes from.
Well, will do, I watched that video. The matter of breathing fine particulates is a real big deal to me because I have chronic obstructive pulmonary problems from many years of smoking and untreated allergies and chronic bronchitis since I was a kid. And the wanton destruction of our environment in so many different ways, and now this frac sand mining, I guess one has to pick out of the panoply of different things that one can attempt to address a couple where one just gets active rather than standing back in horror. And I've been doing a lot of standing back in horror, and I'm feeling like I'm in a different phase in my life. I do believe that the kinds of active involvement that you have been doing has influenced me to look for a turn of that page in my own activities.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I applaud that.
Yeah.
Because it's a matter when one that decides to step up and work to protect one's family, friends, community, neighbors, neighborhood, there is no better manifestation of what it really means to be of the active part of activist. If you remember, right after Barack Obama began running for president, everybody was suddenly a community organizer. Well, there's the sense of community, and there's the sense of organizing that community. And there were a lot of, there are still a lot of people out there who use that as a title but don't actually do it. And as an activist, I'm probably on the in the broad range, I'm probably piss poor, but I'm trying to do what I can. And so, well, trying to do what one can is a big step forward from the vast majority of Americans who remain firmly rooted in their Barca loungers.
I think part of why you're up out of your Barca lounger is because the gorgeous water that, was it your grandma had them dig deeper for, winds up getting poisoned?
Yep.
Had to do something.
And right there, watching one's barely teenage children have organs removed from their body that are reduced to 2% functionality will light a bit of a fire under a butt, too.
I haven't heard about that, but I believe it. Bob, thank you for being here. Quick mention to Bill regarding the matter of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's tenure on the court, on the Supreme Court. I believe that Ms. Ginsburg has expressed the wish to have survived long enough to be in Obama's presidency and into his second term. And I think that she's waiting possibly to step down. This is conjecture here. I know that she wants to step down, if I remember correctly. The conjecture part is that I think that she may be waiting to play her card until Obama manages to replace at least one of the right-wing justices on the Supreme Court first. Because if Obama can get his way, it would be better if Obama got his way replacing one of those people. And then I think that Bader Ginsburg would feel more comfortable about being able to relinquish her seat, and to know that the court was going to turn a corner. I'm not sure that I'm right about that, but I believe that might be her calculus. Anyway, I'm thrilled to have had the opportunity to share a little time with everybody tonight, and I'm glad to join the group here. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely, Roger. And before you go, we just had an email from Jenny, who says, "Hi, Roger. Nice to hear another Wisconsin person." That's the way it works here in the family.
Hi, Jenny.
So take care, Roger. I hope your first call will not be your last, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again.
Oh, you will.
All right.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Roger, calling from Minneapolis, or the Minneapolis area, also a resident of Wisconsin. See how easy that is? Have you sat around nervously thinking, "Oh, my God, what if I say booger or something like that? I can't call it." No, yes, you can. If it can be said that any particular program is easy to call, this is the one. 304-658-3333 is the number, and we'll keep rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, good evening, or whatever it is out there.
Well, hey, Dave, what's happening?
Oh, man, I was flabbergasted when I looked at the news today. I was just kind of blown away. I guess I'm the ultimate political geek or something, but I have been so frustrated for so long to see what's going on in the Congress and the government in general, but I was just really pleased to see Harry Reid do that. I didn't have the confidence that he would ever do that. I was really taken aback. Gotta tell you, it was.
You never really expected that Harry Reid would find the spine, did you?
No. You know, I have this image of him in my mind as this little kid in, you know, the black short pants and the ruffled shirt with the little cap, black cap on with the ribbon on the back, and getting beat up in the schoolyard every day by the bullies. But I don't know. It's like seeing the little kid fight back, it was a totally democratic move with all the anti-democratic games that they've other side's been playing for so long. The House is just a huge mess, and I think that things are, I don't know, really looking up. I was just really pleased and felt real good about it on that. I don't know. A lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, but let's remember, Dave, that this is not the monumental earth-moving, literally, according to NPR, event that it is being portrayed to be. This is a wee tiny tweak to an undemocratic process in a wholly undemocratic institution.
Absolutely. But I think that coming down to what people are just realizing, they've got to get what they can where they can, and to have to continue putting up with the bull that's been pushed in front of us for so long. It's a door that was knocked down, that's all. And it's going to allow stuff to happen, at least. Things can happen. People can get appointed to posts, and things can, judges can get in. And I know that D.C. Circuit was a big issue. It's the second from the Supreme Court. Wow, Tom Hartman's coming to town tomorrow here.
Really?
Yeah, he's going to be in Portland up at Powell's Books on Burnside.
Well, he will be at least, it'll be like a homecoming, won't it?
Yeah, I gotta get down there early because I know it's going to be just slammed over there. I know there's going to be just hordes and hordes and scads of people there because he's kind of a celeb around town. I used to see him in the supermarket now and then. It was funny because he didn't live too far away from me. But I would, you know, like listen to his show every day, and I still do, but it's just... get to see him. That's going to be real cool. But I'm hearing a lot of people sounding off about the minimum wage too. I know these people at Walmart are really fighting back, and they should just have a consumer strike on them. I can't believe that anybody would want to go in that place. You know, we have a Walmart up here on 82nd Avenue, you know, about 40-60 blocks from my house, but I was going with this girl like 10 years ago that was used to love to go to Walmart, and we would always argue about this. I said, I hate that place. I just hate it. I hate going in there. Because, you know, I've known about what they're about for so long. But
and what happens in a small community like mine, Dave, is that they come in and they become Tina. There is no alternative.
Yeah, they're destruction derbyists. My buddy, I may have mentioned him, he lives down in Dallas, Oregon, which is outside of Salem. And Dallas is this little town that used to have 5 sawmills for the Coast Range. And we got a beautiful little town square. I've been over there to the town square, to the courthouse and everything. But it's empty because Walmart came in and just destroyed everybody. All that's left is taverns and bars anymore over there. A couple of McDonald's, I think. But no small businesses. They're terrible. Where Tom lives, where Tom used to live, I think his daughter lived there, out in Selwood. They wanted to put a Walmart in there, and people just said, no, we don't want it. No, we don't want it. We don't want it. And people have stood up when businesses want to come in that they don't like.
I was kind of shocked to see the other day, Dave, that. Ashton Kutcher, you know who he is, right?
Yeah.
TV actor.
70 Show? Yeah.
Right. Ashton Kutcher, who has 15 million followers on Twitter, began taking Walmart to task. And Walmart perked its pointy little ears up real quick. No, we're misunderstood. And he pushed back pretty good.
They should shut their mouths like Chase getting on Twitter.
That was funny.
Last week, people were just saying, "Well, you know, how do you wash the slime off with the tears of babies you've evicted from their homes?"
I liked what Stephen Colbert said the other night. He said, "Maybe the backs of the Walmart workers' vests should stop saying, 'How may I help you?' and just replace it with the word 'Help.'"
Right. Right. Exactly. Hey, I wanted to ask you, before I ask you a question, I wanted to make a suggestion to you supplement that I would suggest that anybody over the age of 50 take, which I take, it makes me really feel good, which is, have you ever heard of pipes, their tubes, their arteries, and it's like this really incredibly high fiber, like Drano for humans. It's awesome stuff, and it just perks me up.
Is it grapefruit stuff that people have to be careful of when they're taking calcium channel blockers?
I don't know. You might have to, if you have a doctor, you might ask him that. But
I have a doctor, what do you think? I got health care?
Yeah, exactly. But I've taken it, I do take it, and I makes me feel a lot better. I feel just, you know, I don't have any health problems. And I've had people in my family have. My dad died of cardio. My dad and my grandfather both had heart attacks and died. Of course, they were in, you know, 79 and 84, but still, I think that I just want to take as many preventative measures as I can, aside from smoking and drinking and everything else. Hey, that reminds me, you were talking about rum one night. I was listening to your show, and you were talking about rum.
Okay.
And you remember that show? I think it was when you couldn't get any calls in, and you went on a 3-hour rant about a variety of things with it. But you mentioned rum. Are you a rum drinker?
Not a lot, but when I do, I know what I like.
What do you like?
I like a nice 8-year-old Barbancourt. The 4-year-old's not bad either, but the 8-year-old is magnificent.
I've never heard of it. What's it called?
Barbancourt. Barbancourt. It comes from Haiti.
So it's a Caribbean rum.
And it is aged. It is an añejo.
Ah.
Now, if we didn't have the stupid embargo, I would have said Havana Club.
Uh-huh. All right.
Personally, I think that there's a reason that bat is on the label of Bacardi. And I think it has to do with the fact that Bacardi is bat piss.
Yeah, I used to drink Bacardi like in the 80s or something like that, but and 151 is terrible stuff. It's horrible. Really, I mean, you can take a shot and see your skin age. Put 6 months on your skin. But have you ever heard of Sailor Jerry? Do they have Sailor Jerry out there?
Oh yes. Sailor and I Sailor Jerry and I are acquainted.
I like Sailor Jerry. I do like it. But
better by far than Captain Morgan where your spice rum.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I was drinking that in the 90s and Sailor Jerry just came out, or didn't just come out, but it's been out for a while, and I tried some of that Sailor Jerry, and I like that a lot, but it's so popular here in Portland. I can't believe it. It's like, there's like a Sailor Jerry famine out here. I mean,
I'm a connoisseur of cheap booze these days, and not a lot of that either. And I ran across a white rum, just plain old white rum. Kind of stuff you'd make a mojito with or a Cuba Libre. By the way, my trick for a great Cuba Libre?
What's that?
You got to go to the grocery store and get the Mexican Cokes because they're still made with sugar and not high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
All the difference in the world.
There's something natural. They have a lot of natural sodas that they sell out here that, you know.
But I ran across something, and it's brewed, distilled in the U.S. Virgin Islands, which means it's likely distilled by the people at Cruzon, but it is called Conch Republic Light Rum.
Conch Republic?
Yeah, C-O-N-C-H. And it's actually, I think it's distributed out of Illinois somewhere. But it's damn fine, and it's, at least here in almost level West by God, Virginia, $8 a liter.
Oh, that's cheap.
Yes, it is.
Booze is cheap out there. I guess do you have state liquor stores?
No, they used to be, but we decided it would be better if we fired all the state workers who were sucking up all those pensions.
Uh-huh.
And getting those state worker wages and farmed all the liquor stores out to people who would participate in a lottery. So now there's either a standalone liquor store retail outlet or it's in, you know, somewhere in the back of a Rite Aid pharmacy.
Oh, they got it in the grocery store and everything.
No. Well, some. Kroger and Beckley, I think, has a liquor franchise.
Okay, because I was going to say that over here in Oregon, we have these state liquor stores, and they're liberalizing. I think they're privately owned, but they're licensed by the state. But they, they're all pretty much have the same selection, and the prices are generally pretty high. I was down in Los Angeles, and the prices are, it's like half as much for booze down there in Los Angeles, because they've got the, like, you know, the private little liquor stores and, you know, supermarkets. They have it at booze at Costco and all that stuff. Over here, it's a little less easy to get to, although the stores are open on Sunday now, at least. But, just a little, I was going to say, I tried this rum that I recommend. It's called the Kraken. Have you ever tried that?
I've seen that. Can't afford it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know.
It's a dark spiced rum, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was cheaper than Sailor Jerry, and they're out of Sailor Jerry anyway. So I tried some of that, and that stuff. Be careful, strong stuff. So. It's like 94 proof or something.
Well, Sailor Jerry's like 92, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it's some chemically somehow different. They put something else.
Well, I gotta be honest. I don't much care for flavored booze. I like it to be what it is. Unless we're talking about something really, something that is traditionally done that way. I like my rum to be rum. I like my tequila to be tequila. I mean, if it's something like Poir Williams where the pear grows inside the bottle, okay, you know, all right, that's how it's made. Or say, a Central European Slivovitz that's made, it's a, you know, 100 proof plum brandy. Okay, sure. But. But you know, I'm not gonna. It's not in me to go out and buy kiwi fruit flavored vodka. I mean,
ew, no. Or that berry flavored. Yeah. My ex, she was a hardcore alcoholic, and she used to drink that like berry flavored seedling, whatever it was. You don't know what this. It's like, you know, berry flavored bubble yum or something like that. The alcohol added. I don't know, but the Kraken. I think they put a lot of caramel in it. It had a real kind of a caramely candy flavor too. But it you don't have to take a lot of it to get the desired effect.
Not at all. And by the way, note coming in from Marty. Ah, my favorite topic, rum.
Yeah, it was. It just was on my mind that. Yeah, take some of that grapefruit pectin after you drink the rum, too. Wash it out of your system.
Isaac just asked that via Twitter. He said, so does Dave clean his pipes before or after he drinks the rum?
Well, you know what I do? When I drink, I drink a lot of water. And I take all my meals with water. I don't drink soda pop, or I don't drink any other, maybe a little fruit juice now and then. But I when I have breakfast, I have water. I'll drink a lot of water. And I never had hangovers too. I've never had a hangover.
That's probably why. As long as you keep sugary beverages away from your liquor, odds are you will not hate yourself the next morning. It's those people who say, "Bring me a slippery nipple," and 5 minutes later say, "I want a Long Island iced tea," and a couple of minutes after that, "Bring me a zombie and a Singapore sling back." Yeah.
Oh,
Singapore sling back. That might be a new beverage.
Singapore sling blade or something, but I take a lot of water, and I don't usually like to drink soda pop either. I used to drink a lot in the mid early 90s, and started making me feel really icky. I got off of it then, and I stayed with the water. Drink a lot of fresh water before you eat, while you're eating. It's the best thing.
And I'm much the same way. Did I lose Dave? I lost Dave. Dadgummit. You'll have that. Try to get back in, Dave, if you can. Hey, thanks. Sal just jumped in this evening. Thank you very much, Sal, for helping move the needle. That takes us down to $275 to raise for the remainder of the evening. That's 27 folks at $10 a piece? Yeah, that's how that works. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Sal. it's amazing what gets people's thoughts going. Kathy in the chat room just asked, Bob, what's your favorite tequila? And it became, well, it is a little tiny boutique tequila called Herencia. I don't know. What do you do with the H? Herencia, H-E-R-E-N-C-I-A, in the Reposado, not the Añejo. Magnificent stuff. Sipping, not slugging. So it is mighty tasty. But then again, there's not a lot of time. I don't have a lot of time for that anymore. I mean, I will confess that while in Wisconsin, and whenever in Wisconsin, I should probably try others. But yes, there was a mug of ice cold, frosty, Nuglaris Spotted Cow involved. Sadly, still can't figure out. I'm going to have to drive up there and fill the vehicle and bring it back, because you can't buy the stuff outside of Wisconsin, dadgummit. But it is. It's wonderful. A little itsy-bitsy, non-corporate, privately owned brewery. And this particular beer is like a, well, it's a, I guess you'd call it a lager or pilsner. It's finished with a little bit of corn grits at the very end, not real hoppy, kind of a nice tang. Ah, yes. Jumping back toward the email bag and being as how I lost Dave, I promise I didn't even push the wrong button. 304-658-3333 is the number. If you want to jump on the Skype line, you are more than welcome. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn is the contact there. If you've never used the Skype line, you're welcome to jump in with it and send me a contact request, and I'll okay it, and away we'll go. But going back to the email bag for a moment, I had a note regarding my earlier objection to the use of the term nuclear option. Had a note from our buddy Michael, and it's Michael's usual high quality nuclear option, and Michael says, "Wow." Beth echoed my feelings exactly. I've been annoyed by the hyperbolic nuclear option phrase for years, ever since the repigs threatened to do it back in the Bush years. I'm glad Harry finally got some spine, but, in Lumberg's voice from Office Space, yeah, if we could just not call it that, that'd be great. With regard to the phrase Ground Zero, I always thought I was the only one. As an adolescent, I did several research projects in school on the Manhattan Project and the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So having particular familiarity with the subject, I used to express annoyance with and object to the term Ground Zero in reference to 9/11, but always met with dead stares when doing so. Isn't that the one of the lovely parts of being a part of the Horn family? Not a lot of dead stares out here. Most people get it. Michael continues, I honestly never understood how the term was even applicable to 9/11. Tragic and horrible as it was, the devastation of 9/11 did not radiate or ripple outward from the WTC site as with a nuclear blast. It was, as we know, a series of four attacks on specific locations contained for the most part to those locations. To me, it never really made sense to call WTC Ground Zero, and I have always avoided doing so. Michael also noting just seconds ago via email, Spotted Cow. Had me a Spotted Cow just last night while watching some live music. Smiley face. Madison. You should make the pilgrimage out to see the brewery. It's just a wee little bit of nothing. And VJ, by the way, has a note for us. I knew there was something about grapefruit. VJ says, yes, it's true. People who are taking Lipitor or other statins should not take grapefruit or grapefruit juice. My doctor has advised me of that since I am on Lipitor. Thanks, VJ. Often there will be something kind of tickling at the back of my mind. And thanks for the help, VJ. And then Granny T in Tennessee. Hi, Bob. I second and third the request that Sandra call in often. She is so intelligent and is always 99.9% correct in her analysis and predictions on all the political BS. This is not even to mention her killer sense of humor. This is a real bummer week for me. We'll probably cry and snivel all day tomorrow. Yeah, I'm an oldie. I just turned 17 when JFK was blown away. Turned my little world upside down. Talk about the end of the innocence. Good thoughts and wishing happy Thanksgiving to the Horn family. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Granny T, in Tennessee. I hope it'll be a dandy. And yeah, I think a lot of people's minds will be turning toward Dealey Plaza tomorrow, where they're having a commemoration of the assassination without saying assassination. What was that line the other night that was toaster worthy? What, did he get hit by a truck? Yeah, that was Jim. That was Jim in Louisiana stand. Yeah, I don't know how they're going to handle the fact that they've got an assassination museum without saying. Well, all right. And I'm sorry. I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I think he may have been exactly what he told America in the one chance that he got to say anything. I'm a patsy. Oh, Granny T has a P.S. Sorry, no check your way yet. Went to the doc again today, then to the drugstore. Broke again. Single care health coverage? Single payer health care? Where art thou? Amen to that, Granny T. Amen to that. Jim says, intense buffering dead air. Let me check the chat room. This will only take a second. It was dead air while I was in. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Duncan. Nope, no dead air there. Texas Betsy, nope. Lottie, nope. All good, Bob, according to Blue Ape. So, Jim, maybe restart your player. Loud and clear, says Sergi. Thank you. And yeah, Sergi, who is waiting for the dangerous thunderstorms to hit Dallas, followed by snow flurries and what? An ice storm? Lovely Texas weather, he notes. Thanks, Kathy. All clear here, too. Excellent. Thanks for the info. Irish Dave asking, based on the previous conversation, so will you be driving Thunder Road? Thunder Road or Thunderbird? All right. Or thereabouts. Let's see. About 10 past the hour, we can, yeah, I think I'm going to take a little break. Because it's Thursday, after all, and being as how it's Thursday, that means it's time for the Green News Report with our buddies Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Hopefully there will be no mention of any nuclear options. At any rate, this is Conversation Radio, trying to keep the lights on here. And anybody who wants to kick in and help over the PayPal button or the traditional mail address, please know that this is how we keep it going, and it is dearly appreciated. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to jump into the conversation. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
It's Thursday, November 21, 2013.
It's our message to our political leaders. Nature does not negotiate.
Impasse at the UN Climate Summit as developing nations walk out.
We are the first human beings to ever breathe air with 400 parts per million of CO2.
Just 90 companies are responsible for most of man-made global warming.
So much rain in the last 24, 36 hours. Unheard of.
Apocalyptic rains strike again, this time in Sardinia. Plus, Did you hear the one about the Polish environment minister who was fired in the middle of the UN climate summit in Poland?
All of those Polish non-jokes and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The blockers, the big blockers, Australia, Japan, U.S., Canada, not agreeing to any of the commitments that they've already legally signed up to.
Oh, right. Always blame the bloggers. It's always the bloggers' fault for everything.
Wait. Brad, it's blockers, not bloggers. Blockers. The big countries blocking climate action.
Oh. Well, f*** them. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we have been asking listeners this week to please help support the Green News Report's efforts to connect the climate dots. We really need you folks to stop on by bradblog.com and donate to our efforts so we can keep doing our work over your public airwaves. And we were reminded again how important this is when, what was it, 17 inches of rain were dumped on Sardinia in Italy in like 24 hours?
Yeah.
Connecting the dots. That's what we're trying to do, folks. We need your help. Go to bradblog.com and donate.
Well, first it was biblical floods in Boulder, Colorado in September. Now they've come to Sardinia.
There's been so much rain in the last 24, 36 hours. Unheard of. One official called it apocalyptic.
The latest in a string of deadly extreme weather disasters around the world. At least 18 people killed in flash floods on the island of Sardinia off the coast of Italy after a Mediterranean cyclone dumped 17 inches. That's 6 months of rain in less than 24 hours.
But nothing to see here, folks. Nothing at all.
They had lots to see there. It caused flash floods in some areas as high as 10 feet. Meteorologists said the storm stalled over Sardinia due to a blocking pattern in the jet stream. Some scientists theorize the jet stream is slowing down because of loss of sea ice in the Arctic. Impasse at the UN climate summit.
Our message to our political leaders, nature does not negotiate. You cannot change the science.
That was Kumi Naidu, head of Greenpeace International, after walking out of the UN climate treaty talks, which conclude this Sunday in Warsaw, Poland. 133 developing nations, big international environmental groups like Greenpeace, and hundreds of activists walked out of the negotiations blaming rich countries and the powerful fossil fuel industry for blocking progress on emissions cuts and financial aid to developing nations.
Our political leaders have the temerity to tolerate that we are called hooligans, when in fact the real hooligans are the CEOs and the big bosses of oil, coal and gas companies that have completely captured our governments and have completely captured this negotiating process.
At the summit, Japan, Australia and Canada all dialed back their previous commitments to cut their own emissions by 2020.
They lowered their commitments from previous negotiations?
Yes, they have reduced what they pledged to do. And that's a big problem, according to a new report from Climate Action Tracker, which calculates that the current emissions path we're on has put the planet on track for a likely global temperature increase of nearly 4 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels.
With that in mind, these major countries are now going backwards in these negotiations?
That's right.
Amazing.
That temperature is double what scientists predict is a safer and adaptable rise of 2 degrees Celsius.
Oh, man.
The report calls 4 degrees Celsius, quote, incompatible with organized global community and potentially beyond adaptation.
Once again, nothing to see here, people.
Meanwhile, Poland, the host of the UN summit, fired its environment minister in the middle of the UN conference on Wednesday and replaced him with a new environment minister who will focus on natural gas and coal.
Meaning focus on limiting natural gas and coal.
No, accelerating natural gas and coal.
What the hell is going on here?
I know, right?
This is a mess.
Poland also hosted the annual meeting of the World Coal Association at the same time and just a mile away from the UN climate summit. So perhaps Poland is not clear on the concept of climate change.
Sounds like we'd do better if we stopped having these UN climate talks every year.
That may be the case. Finally, just 90 companies in the world are responsible for two-thirds of human-caused global warming. That's according to a new study in the journal Climatic Change that says big oil companies like ExxonMobil and BP and big coal make up most of the dirty 90 companies responsible for most of the world's emissions.
And so all of this fight is about them, is about protecting their profits, really?
That's what it looks like.
Unbelievable. For much more on all of this, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. greennewsreport.com. And like I say, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report continue connecting the dots of the climate crisis. We really need you. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Another fine mess you've gotten us into.
Sentenced to hang for committing this crime.
I tried to explain, but I couldn't begin to.
I couldn't recall key moments in time.
The hour, and not Thunder Road, Copperhead Road, Irish Dave. You were responsible for that, so thank you for the inspiration. That's a great album, Copperhead Road, 1988, Steve Earle. Man, I remember having the door open in December, studying that year and listening to that album over and over and over and over. Big crowd in the chat room tonight. Hey, guys. Gang. Thanks for popping on by. It's a good conversation cooking along in there. If you want to jump in, feel free. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's easy. It is free. And it's sort of a great way to hang out during the program. By the way, thank you very kindly to VJ, who just helped out this evening. Took us down to $250 to go before to come up with the fundraising goal that brings us to even. Thank you very, very much, VJ. It is sincerely and deeply appreciated. Again, I note, it's the only thing that keeps all this going. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to get involved. Roger popped into the chat room and noted, he said, I completely forgot to go into the matter of the power of language and framing and the abuse of a horrific term like nuclear option to describe having an incremental increase of democracy in our Congress. Very filibuster worthy. Thank you, Roger. Thank you kindly. Email from Robert in Australia. Bob, besides single-payer health care, the USA needs a PBS, pharmaceutical benefits scheme, because so many medications cost more than average people can afford to pay. In Australia, those medications are placed on the PBS. The cost is subsidized by the government, i.e., everyone. Isn't that neat, that concept of we the people? It's a real pleasure. Robert says, I'm lucky. I get $2,000 worth of medication per month for under $20 because the medications I take are on the PBS. Otherwise, I'd probably be unable to walk more than a few steps. And, signed Robert, and he says, by the way, sorry that Australia is one of the blockers. That's the fracking Liberal Party for you. Australia could go totally solar overnight, but no! Our Prime Minister Tony Abbott says global warming is crap. And of course, what is crap is turning one's nose up at an energy source like the sun. What a bunch of yahoos. I was fascinated by that story coming out of Poland where developing nations walked out after Australia, the United States, the EU tanked any notion of compensation for global warming-driven weather events. I mean, that was the source of it. Isn't it interesting? I don't know. I don't. I won't. I can't. I just can't listen to right-wing radio. But did anybody? Did any of the right-wing hacks and flacks and jerks and pukes get around to calling them reparations? Because that's how they operate. I first ran across the story because I got a right-wing story pitch from some jackass. Who calls himself the executive director for the Climate Science Coalition of America. Now, with a name like that, you know he's got to be a denier, right? Well, you're right. Yesterday, 132 developing nations walked out of the United Nations climate talks in Warsaw. Their demands that the United States and other developed nations pay compensation for extreme events such as Hurricane Haiyan. These nations are demanding a new organization at the United Nations and an automatic mechanism for loss and damage compensation when weather events occur. Because, see, that's all Typhoon Haiyan was. That was just a weather event. It's kind of like Fat Man and Little Boy were just bombs. Since the U.S. is responsible, scare quotes around responsible, for most historic greenhouse gas emissions, the U.S. would be the major target for payments for events supposedly caused by man-made climate change. Please invite me to join you on Head On with Bob Kincaid to discuss United Nations demands, climate change, and my book, The Mad, Mad World of Climatism. Climatism, right. People who don't want to be drowned beneath a rising sea are followers of climatism. Just like people who don't want to die from breathing in ultrafine particulates. We're tree huggers. Granted, this is the internet, and if I just wanted to let loose of an invective laden string of obscenities at that kind, I could. I won't. I'm better than that. I'm above it. Staggin' black, staggin' not pole, frazzleckin'. This clown calls his organization a non-political association of scientists, engineers, and citizens working to inform Americans about the realities of climate science and energy economics. I am a public speaker. And by public speaker, he means he's been on the G. Gordon Liddy show. No, really. The mad, mad, mad world of climatism, mankind, and climate change mania. Apparently there's a cartoon in his book that shows a chicken with a floaty ring around it standing at the beach screaming, "The oceans are rising, the oceans are rising," while a polar bear seated on a beach lounge chair says, "Chicken Little has a new cause." Fuckers. Oh, sorry. God! They won't be happy until they're the only ones left, will they? The Guardian story, noting representatives of most of the world's poor countries have walked out of increasingly fractious climate negotiations after the EU, Australia, the US, and other developed countries insisted that the question of who should pay compensation for extreme climate events be discussed only after 2015. And, of course, after 2015, we're going to discuss. I hear my mother. What, Mom? Oh, yeah, I got it. Hey, Australia and the EU and us, we got to go. We hear our mother calling. Sorry, we can't discuss compensation for people who are being freaking drowned.
by virtue of stuff that we've done. The walkout was orchestrated by the G77 and the China bloc of 132 countries. Oh, we are going to dither while Rome drowns. Well, that's probably true, Irish Dave. You know, at porn sites, climatisms are often fake too, also. And a little help for those out there trying to pay for medications. Randy points out, Costco pharmacy medications, if you have a Costco, can cost as little as 1/40th of the price at chain store pharmacies. That according to a PBS Consumer Reports study. One example was a cancer medication that cost $11 at Costco, but cost $440 at CVS. Randy notes, one must shop around. You know what I'd like? I kind of like that system I experienced briefly, ever so briefly, in Germany, where the drug was the same price no matter where you went. And the doctor could tell you in the office how much the drug was going to cost. I thought it was pretty cool. Let's see. So onward from the climate walkout. You know, I'd kind of like to. Hey, you know what? Gosh, being as how I'm just an ignorant hillbilly, I sure hope that the Sierra Club was there in Warsaw to speak for me. Wait, they'd have to acknowledge our existence to speak. Interesting little piece of data arising from the recent Virginia elections. No, it's not interesting. It's actually kind of scary. No, it's not kind of scary. It's real scary. Of people voting in Virginia in the recent statewide elections, there were 222 voters, according to folks at Think Progress, who were forced to cast a provisional ballot. Why? Because they didn't have a valid form of voter identification at the polling place. Because you have to have a photo ID to go and do all that voting now, even if you don't have money for a photo ID, or even if you don't... Right. Mostly it disenfranchises old folks, persons of color, and persons of diminished economic means. So 222 voters were forced to cast provisional ballots, and once they had gotten done doing that hoodoo that they do so well, the Old Dominion decided that they were only going to let 88 people actually have a vote out of that 222. Only 88 of 222 provisional ballots cast were actually voted. Prior to 2012, the report notes, people casting without a valid form of ID would sign an affidavit of eligibility, a legal oath that swore that they were actually legal to vote, you know, Americans of age greater than 18 years. But now, no. One has to, in Virginia Stan, one has to present photo ID. And according to the research done by Think Progress, having called voter registrars in all 133 Virginia cities and counties, they found out that with the 2012 law in effect, 134 apparently registered voters were either unable or unwilling to produce one of the legally valid forms of identification. Surprised they're not down to using, as Jim has noted in the past, surprised they're not down to using ballpoint pens and wax paper and
Chinese restaurant menus. Those were both really, really big in the Jim Crow South. According to the report, it is estimated that between 4,200 and from 4,200 registered voters to 870,000 people total. That's the range estimated of the of Virginians who lack a valid photo ID. This is going to be great for popular sovereignty and self-government, don't you think? No, it's going to be terrible, and that's the way Alec wants it. Speaking of Alec, there's a new organization out. You thought Alec was fun. This is even better. Keep your eye out for an outfit that goes by the name of the Center for Media and Democracy.
Well, gosh, that sounds so American and so patriotic and so warm and fuzzy. Therefore, it's not.
The Center for Media and Democracy. Oh, wait, that is a good organization. Got ahead of myself. No, the State Policy Network is the name of the organization in question, the SPN. The Center for Media and Democracy has actually done the reporting on this this bunch of anti-freedom punks. Oh, punks is the wrong word. Guinea worms. 64 think tanks have gathered together to form the State Policy Network. And there's a think tank in every single state, and in some states there's more than one. What's their purpose? They serve as a deeply covered lobbying arm for huge corporations and big money right-wing folks. I love numbers like this. The story from The Guardian says, the network's $83.2 million annual war chest, $83.2 million annual budget. You can probably buy a lot of voter suppression with that. On the list of the folks who provide the $83.2 million, well, of course, the usual round up the usual suspects. There's the Koch brothers. Oh, look, it's Philip Morris Tobacco Company. And the parent company of Philip Morris, Altria Group. Hey, look, Kraft Foods. And, well, the list wouldn't be complete without GlaxoSmithKline, the drug hustler. But here's where it gets fun. According to a 2010 public document that listed the SPN, State Policy Network's, funders, the funders also include AT&T, as well as Microsoft. They both gave $99,000. Time Warner Cable and Verizon gave up to $24,000. And then at the annual meeting in, oh dear, that had to be fun, Oklahoma City in September, Facebook, Microsoft, and Time Warner all ponied up money to sponsor the annual meeting. Charming, huh? Now, having been called a right-wing front group, Tracy Sharp, who is the president of the State Policy Network, said in a statement that the State Policy Network is dedicated to providing
state-based free market think tanks with the academic and management resources required to run a nonprofit institution.
Yeah. The minute you see that word free market, that little ache in your ear, yeah, that's the dog whistling. Anytime you see free market, you know there are going to be right-wingers involved. Uh, some big policy pushes they make. They're against taxes on internet shopping. They're against regulatory activities of the Federal Communications Commission. In other words, they're opposed to net neutrality. Lots of techs and telecoms. Microsoft, when called on its participation in this nasty little gang, said, "As a large company, Microsoft has a great interest in the many policy issues discussed across the country. We have a long-standing record of engaging with a broad assortment of groups on a bipartisan basis. Show me. Both at the national and the local level. In regard to State Policy Network, Microsoft has focused our participation on their technology policy work because it is valuable. It's a valuable forum to hear various perspectives about technology challenges and to share potential solutions." You know, with Microsoft involved, I'm surprised every time they walk into the room, the entire room doesn't stand up and go and say, "Windows 8 sucks!" But the proof is in the pudding. The State Policy Network works in parallel with the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, of which my senator, my junior senator, is the only member of the Democratic Party in the Senate of the United States who is a member of ALEC. Charming, isn't it? Good question, Irish Dave. Shouldn't they include family in their name? The State Family Policy Network? Yeah. By the way, with regard to voter suppression, a note in from Beth. "I'll put our Texas voter ID law up against anybody's." Well, here's a beautiful thing. It turns out that Wendy Davis, who so heroically filibustered the Texas Senate attempt to, and they ultimately got their way, have control over women's reproductive organs, Wendy Davis very nearly wasn't able to vote in the application of the new Texas voter suppression law. This is a story from October 30th from MSNBC. Davis, the Democratic candidate for governor next year, showed up Monday to vote early in her hometown of Fort Worth. Several constitutional amendments and other proposals are on the ballot in Texas. It's the first election to be held under the state's kind of yada, yada, yada. But when the state senator got to her polling place, poll workers noted that the name on her driver's license, Wendy Russell Davis, didn't match that on her voter rolls, Wendy Davis. Obviously, she's trying to get in, probably trying to sneak a Kenyan Muslim socialist anti-colonialist in there to vote. Well, hell, they might vote 15 or 20 times. So, as a matter of law, she had to sign an affidavit swearing that she was who she said she was. That's what they had in Virginia before the new voter ID papers, please. Your papers are not in order. Jesus. Turns out the frontrunner for the GOP nomination for governor, Greg Abbott, will have to sign an affidavit, too. Me too. I gotta sign. Yeah. See, it's not just those satanic liberals. Really, satanic. You know this? Did you hear this? The aforementioned Greg Abbott responding to this nasty, ugly, rotten little bit of racism that sort of burbled up out of the filth at the University of Texas in Austin, and the little bit of filth had to do with a game that the young conservatives of Texas wanted to play called Catch an Illegal Immigrant. It was canceled this past Monday after a lot of people noticed exactly how filthy it was. They literally wanted to send people out immigrant hunting. Oof. The head of the UT chapter of Young Conservatives of Texas is a young failure in parenting by the name of Lorenzo Garcia. He said that they canceled the event because they were afraid that the university would retaliate against them and that protests against the event could create a safety issue for our volunteers. Yeah, they're always persecuted, aren't they? Jeebus. But anyway, Greg Abbott. He was downright put off by the fact that the Young Conservatives of Texas, led by Lorenzo Garcia, couldn't have their catch an illegal immigrant game. And again, being a right-wing jackass, Abbott put out a press release saying, "Our campaign has no affiliation with this." Wait, what? Oh, there we go. Yeah, this is beautiful. This is a gorgeous piece of misdirection. "Our campaign has no affiliation with this repugnant effort. Illegal immigration and the failed policies of the Obama administration are not a joking matter." This was issued by spokesperson Abdiel Huerta. Abdiel Huerta continued, "Conservatives should not stoop to the level of liberals whose shenanigans at the Texas Capitol this summer included chants of Hail Satan during Senator Davis's filibuster to allow abortions after 5 months did nothing but sidetrack the Texas legislature." Did you know that everybody who showed up to speak up for the rights of women to have control over the workings of their own bodies, every one of them had to chant Hail Satan in order to be able to attend? Every last one. You could hardly hear the repig lickings for all that Hail Satan chanting, except for the fact that only one person did it, and these hyperbolic, filthy liars turned it into, "Oh, the Democrats chant Hail Satan. Remember, Republicans don't chant Hail Satan." No, they don't. Republicans bring in people with guns in religious ceremonies. I don't know. Which do you like? An unarmed person saying Hail Satan, or a person decked out in all the robes of Mother Church bringing in gun thugs? You tell me. Because that's what the Chicago Sun-Times says. Roman Catholic Bishop Thomas John Poprocki, really, yesterday, performed an exorcism on the entire state of Illinois. I wonder if he got any of those frackers Jeff Biggers was talking about. Probably not. Governor Pat Quinn has signed a bill legalizing same-sex marriage in Illinois. He has also refused to step up or speak up for anyone who doesn't want to be poisoned to death by fracking, but they're separate issues, and we'll try to focus. Focus, Bob, please! So Pat Quinn signed a bill legalizing same-sex marriage in Illinois, and Roman Catholic Bishop Thomas John Poprocki, whose ecclesiastical robes should probably have sleeves that tie in the back, showed up in a stunning purple frock. It is a frock, isn't it? And I presume a House of Whoville hat. To put on an exorcism. Now, if you're going to exorcise the entire state of Illinois, contrary to what you may expect or think, you do not do it in Chicago. And you also don't do it in Urbana-Champaign. If you're going to exorcise the state of Illinois, you have to do it there at the state capitol
Springfield. Mr. Lincoln's town. He walked up to the altar of a cathedral that was just about SRO, or maybe SOL, depending on your view. And with two armed Springfield City Police, conducted his exorcism. Because nothing says faith in the almighty creator of the universe quite like feeling like you need a couple of cops. No, really, he had a flowing purple robe. I wasn't kidding. Some 500 idiots showed up to listen to him, in which he delivered a homily, claiming that Governor Pat Quinn is and his supporters are morally complicit in an act which he deemed to be evil. Deliver us from evil, Father Pop Rocks said. They sizzle in your mouth, just those Pop Rocks do, a little bit like hell itself. He said he came to do the exorcism there in the church in Springfield, in front of the 500 schmucks, marks, rubes, and assorted yahoos. In his words, with great reluctance. Pappy Pop Rocks said, God is asking me to speak out and give these prayers. God did. Told him so. Voices inside my head. Sorry, I love the Police. God is asking me to speak out and give these prayers. And essentially exercised the governor of Illinois. Is Pat Quinn a Roman Catholic? Why not just excommunicate him? Oh, for the love of... Will no one rid us of this meddlesome priest? Also, in blathering on in his homily, he said, Quinn did, the church embraces chaste gays and lesbians. So as long as the gays and lesbians don't partake of the love that his God created them, well, you get the idea. He said, the church loves homosexual persons and looks upon them with compassion. You know what? I don't think there's a lot of gay folks out there that need Father Pop Rocky's compassion. Because it's pretty clear that it is hollow. It only makes a sound when thumped. But then he got around to the business end of the exorcism and he said, I exorcise you, every unclean spirit, every power... It's so much better in the Latin, really. I exorcise you, every unclean spirit, every power of darkness, every incursion of the infernal enemy, every diabolical legion, cohort, infection, in the name and power of our Lord Jesus Christ. Is that much hate going on? It really is a pity that... Jesus isn't around to look down and say, what are you talking about? Be uprooted. Really, he said root. be uprooted and put to flight from the church of God, from souls created in the image of God and redeemed by the precious blood of the divine Lamb. Dare no more, O cunning serpent. There's the serpent thing again. Was it talking? We don't know. To deceive the human race, to persecute the church of God. Oh, really? A couple of guys getting monogrammed towels and getting hitched is persecuting the church. Can somebody get Pope Frank on the line? This dude is in desperate need of screw the exorcism. Just excommunicate his weirdo, homophobic, bigoted ass. Dare no more, O cunning serpent. Dr. Freud, are you busy? Oh, no, Bob. No. I've just been sitting listening, smoking my cigar. I've been meaning to ask you about that. No, Bob. We've been over this before. Sometimes a cigar is only a cigar. What about serpents, though? Oh, serpents? Serpents? Where are you getting the serpents? The bishop here. He referred to homosexuals as cunning serpents. Oh, well. I suspect he hated his mother and hoped to replace his father with a serpent of his own. We'll see how it works, Bob. Thanks, Doc. But really, when folks toddled into the cathedral there for the exorcism, and really, there's probably, there just aren't that many exorcisms. To go to, so it probably, yeah, he did draw a good crowd. But the minute they toddled through the door, they couldn't help seeing that the father had prepared a place for them by bringing in a couple of Springfield cops with loaded weapons to gun them down in case anybody got out of hand or spoke up and started being all Homer sectional when the exorcism's going on. Because that's how it is with the cunning serpents. I mean, the exorcism starts going on, people are frothing at the mouth, you know, heads turning around, people in the because the chicken said during the exorcism, right? Yeah, pluck me, pluck me. But I mean, maybe there were some closeted homosexuals in there, or maybe just some planted homosexuals, God only knows what they might have done with their cunning serpents, and they had to be gunned down in cold blood by the armed up agents of the what was it, the Divine Lamb. Oh, Marcellus, I must say the Lamb was divine. A little bit of rosemary. Yeah, really, Irish Dave. Really, not kidding. Irish Dave asking, cops? Moonlighting as serpent wranglers? That in its own right is probably suitable for discussion. Randy with a trenchant observation. Isn't it wonderful how their deities hate the same things that they do? Except maybe the priest doesn't hate the money changers and isn't in favor of a debt jubilee. No, we'll not be having any debt jubilees because the church has been busy having rather of an ugly little bankruptcy anti-jubilee lately. Cunning serpents. But that's okay. Don't think that it's just a Bishop Poprocky problem. Who knew? There is, if you go rooting around in the New Testament, a reference that Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and barely, if at all, literate itinerant rabbi, he refers to religious hypocrites as empty tombs. Got another empty tomb for you. Like I said, you can't just lay it all off on the Roman Catholics. No. Because there is, of course, the Methodist Church, which has demanded that one of its pastors who committed the grave sin of marrying two guys together with each other has insisted that that Methodist minister disown his three gay children and promise to never, ever, ever, ever marry up any homosexuals ever, ever again. Empty tombs. Beautiful and white and shiny on the outside and full of death on the inside. Ugh. Hey, by the way, it's time to get out of here, but I do want to remind you tomorrow will be Friday on the Front Porch. I hope you'll feel free to join in either via the Skype line or the traditional telephone lines. We have a whale of a doggone good time on Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. Jump right in. Thanks to everybody who helped out financially this evening with your kind contributions. Thanks to everybody who took us from $350 down to $250. $250. Thank you. Those thanks include Ed, who got us started, and Kathy, and Sal, and PJ. Thank you very, very much. It's the only way this keeps going. And, of course, thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Here comes Rick Smith, the one and only, on the Horn.